See you, and of course I can see you. If you're listening to this program, I can see you perfectly okay. You, sir, you should not listen to the radio in torn underwear. Crazy. that's the only word I can think of tonight. Crazy. Crazy. Aside from the fact that, you know, we're all going to die from global warming, you know, if you just sort of stay away from that for a moment, crazy. Political craziness. Have you heard, we're going to be all over the map tonight, by the way. We have a moment with Bob coming up here in about half an hour. Romney says, in a political ad, quote, under Obama's welfare plan, you wouldn't have to work and wouldn't have to train for a job. They just send you your welfare check, end quote. See, this is what it's come to. Romney knows that he has got to push all the buttons of the crazy people in this country. The next thing Romney is going to do is put on an ad that says, Barack Obama wants to force your child to become a Muslim. Barack Obama is going to make certain that your child has to go to a mosque for his education directly from the Quran. That's coming next. But today it was, under Obama's plan for welfare, you wouldn't have to work. And you wouldn't have to train for a job. They just send you your welfare check. Now, the ad opens thanks to Tampa Bay Times PolitiFact.com, Pulitzer Prize winner, run by the St. Pete Times. The Romney ad opens with a picture of former President Bill Clinton signing the 1996 Welfare Reform Act, which certainly hurt an awful lot of poor folks in this country. But keep in mind that Bill Clinton was a center-right Republican. He was not a Democrat by any stretch of the imagination. But the 96 Welfare Reform Act that he and Newt Gingrich and the right-wingers in the House and Senate worked out shifted welfare from government assistance to one based on steering people toward employment and self-reliance, whether there was jobs available or not. You know, didn't make any difference. We're going to steer you towards jobs. What? There's no jobs? Darn. Well, hold on. Now, in the ad, after you see Clinton signing this Welfare Reform Act, the words unprecedented success flash on the screen. The narrator says, Clinton and a bipartisan Congress helped end welfare as we know it by requiring work for welfare. But on July 12th, President Obama quietly announced a plan to gut welfare reform by dropping work requirements. Under Obama's plan, you wouldn't have to work and wouldn't have to train for a job. They just send you your welfare check. And welfare to work goes back to being plain old welfare. Now, the July 12th announcement made by the Department of Health and Human Services. HHS, allows states to try different ways of meeting the work requirements of the federal law. Does it really mean they just send you your welfare check? Well, PolitiFact decided to look a little bit further. Now, a little background. Since 1996, welfare has been administered through block grants to states through a program called TANF, Temporary Assistance to Needy Families. It limits how long families can get aid, requires recipients to eventually go to work. It also includes stringent reporting requirements for states to show that they are moving people off welfare and into the workforce, even if there are no jobs. But never mind about that. A memo from George Sheldon, who's the acting assistant secretary at HHS, said the department wanted to give states more flexibility in meeting those requirements. You know, states' rights, states, because the states, some of the states are suffering more critically than others, right? So states' rights, right? States' rights, states' rights. Oh, no. Not to these right-wingers who can't stand the black guy in the White House. The memo notifies states, quote, of the secretary's willingness to exercise her waiver authority to allow states to test alternative and innovative strategies, policies, and procedures that are designed to improve employment outcomes for needy families, end quote. The memo outlined, and this is where they get into the jargon of federal bureaucracy, but the memo outlined the kinds of waivers that would be considered. It suggested projects that, quote, improve collaboration with the workforce and or post-secondary education systems. It also has demonstrate strategies for more effectively serving individuals with disabilities. Those are two examples. Now, what does all that mean? Liz Schott, senior fellow at the left-leaning Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, translated it for us. It says, if you can do a better job connecting people to work, we would consider waiving certain parts of the performance measures and use alternate measures. Now, Schott, who studies welfare policy, said the TANF sets guidelines for what activities may count toward meeting the law's work requirements. You know, jobs, job training, internships, or schools, to name a few. Beyond that, it puts restrictions on how many hours a welfare client may spend at school, how many consecutive months they can attend before they act before that activity no longer counts toward the work requirement. See, in other words, the Clinton Act in 1996 brings a hammer down on people. I mean, you have such a narrow little crawl space to operate inside or within that if you make one mistake, if you go past one deadline, that's it. You're cut off. Forever! So Liz Schott, the senior fellow at the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, said, as a result, states are running less effective programs than they might be because they're so driven by performance measurements as it's set forth in the federal law. Do you understand this? You could only have so much time in school, only so much time in job training, only so much time here, so much time there. And then if you, you know, the person who is unemployed, poor, welfare recipient, TANF, whatever you want to call it these days, if you are not meeting the requirements, they kick your ass to the curb. This is the great Bill Clinton liberal, we're going to get people off welfare act. Yeah, we're going to get them off welfare and put them in the goddamn street. Anyway, these waivers then that Health and Human Services came up with would allow for some flexibility. For example, someone with a special needs child might require different work arrangements than are currently allowed. Or a person who needs to improve his or her English skills might need more time to take classes. Liz Schott said, quote, it's really about the underlying program. The real starting place is, what's the most effective program to get this person to work, end quote. Now, shouldn't that, I mean, that's the way it should be, right? Is the goal to get people to work, or is the goal to beat and punish and kick to the curb and be mean and hateful and right-wing to people who can't defend themselves? Oh, that's an easy question, truth seekers. In a memo released along with the ad, the Romney campaign says the change, quote, undermines the very premise of welfare reform. It is an insult to Americans on welfare who are looking for an opportunity to build better lives for themselves. It's a kick in the gut to the millions of hardworking middle-class taxpayers struggling in today's economy, working more or less, more for less, but always preferring self-sufficiency to a government handout.
What? Where? But, I mean, where did that last come from? A kick in the gut to be... States' rights! States' rights! States' rights, you sick sons of bitches! States' rights! Isn't that what you've always screamed about? Well, there's a little more here. Stick around. But until that morning, they're gonna work you for peanuts.
Radio Right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So the topic at hand is this charge by Mitt Romney in another one of these filthy, obscene political television ads that under Obama's plan for welfare, you wouldn't have to work, you wouldn't have to train for a job. They just send you a welfare check. Tampa Bay Times, PolitiFact.com, a Pulitzer Prize-winning site, has taken apart what Romney said in this ad. Romney is just, I mean, this guy is a real loose cannon. I mean, he's starting to scare me for this reason, on the possibility that his operating team is able to steal the election. To have this kind of a madman in control, I would have felt better with Barry Goldwater, I think, than this guy. Not only is he the stupidest son of a bitch that has ever run for president, bar none, he makes Bush, the younger, look like he had, I don't know, at least a high school education. Not only is Romney the stupidest man ever to run, but he's the most manipulable, and he's the biggest liar. I mean, it's one thing. Our political system is so corrupted, and you know this as well as I do, that it's just full of different shades of bullcrap. But to come right out like this, this is what you expect from the teabag freaks in their little local elections back in Arizona or Michigan or Georgia. Sick man, I swear to God. Anyway, the ad says... Or the memo that was released by the Romney brown shirts along with the ad says the change that Health and Human Services is proposing underlies the very premise of welfare reform. But, of course, it does nothing of the sort. It allows the states in a time of extreme financial stress to make some changes to maybe help people get to work. To maybe ease some of the restrictions. God, I hate these people. The right-wingers. The memo says that Obama, quote, hopes states will consider approaches that remove work participation rate requirements altogether, end quote. And as PolitiFact points out, the HH letter contains nothing of the sort. In several places, it says only proposals from states that improve, quote, improve employment outcomes, end quote, will be considered. Improve employment outcomes. So the Romney cadre has taken this because they understand who's going to vote for them. They understand the idiocy of this so-called independent voters. That's who Obama and Romney are going after, the independent voter, the 30% of the electorate in this country that hasn't made up its mind. Are you goddamn crazy? Sigh. The Romney campaign also contends that Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius is not legally allowed to waive the existing work requirements. Robert Rector, a welfare expert with the Conservative Heritage Foundation, argues that the part of the law allowing waivers does not cover TANF work provisions. In a July 27th column in the National Review, the right-wing National Review, he wrote, quote, critically, this section, as well as most other TANF requirements, is deliberately not listed. Its provisions cannot be waived, end quote. Now, as PolitiFact says, that might be a point, but it's one that the courts will have to settle. Romney's ad says, under Obama's plan for welfare, you wouldn't have to work and wouldn't have to train for a job. They just send you your welfare check. That is a complete lie and a total distortion. They just send you your welfare check. PolitiFact concludes, the ad's claim is not accurate, and it inflames old resentments about able-bodied adults sitting around collecting public assistance. We call pants on fire. Well, that's kind of cute, but I call goddamn liar. That's what I call goddamn liar. But, you know. Now, a little more on this when we come back. We have a moment with Bob that kind of, sort of, possibly ties into all this. So, I hope you'll stick around. Yeah, I'm probably going to be cussing a lot. Oh, and we have a moment, not a moment, but we have a missive from Prairie, too, tonight also. So, stick around. You do know that they put a lander on Mars, right? I'm Mike Malloy.
He lies and he lies and he lies. He lies and he lies and he lies. He must despise all the what fors and whys. The way he lies and he lies and he lies. Lies and he lies and he lies and he lies. He can lie any time, he can lie any place. He crosses his fingers and keeps a straight face. He lies and he lies and he lies. Too many believe him, they're bleating like sheep. Accomplices now in the liar's deceit. He lies and he lies and he lies.
How much he hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
Is that the best we've got? Oh, jeez. This hour is being sponsored by Diane Breezy. And her message, this is memory of my mom, who would have been 86 today. She passed away in 2011. My mom was from Austria and lived through the Second World War. She would tell me how her father would listen to Air America on a handmade radio to hear the truth about what was happening in the war. This is why I listen to your show, for the truth. Keep up the good work. All the best to you, Kathy and Molly, Diane. Now, of course, the Air America she's referring to is not the network that lasted about 4 years in the early part of this decade, last decade. Thanks, Diane. It's time, I believe, once again. Ah! Do I hear the ukulele? It's time, once again, for A Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's episode is entitled Irrelevant But Not Meaningless. Hey, Mike, I won't vote for Barack Obama. I can't vote for Barack Obama, and it's not because he's not liberal enough for me. I gave up on the idea of a progressive president before I was old enough to vote. No, the reason I won't vote for Obama is because he's just slightly less murderous than George W. Bush, and a man with bloody hands doesn't have our best interests at heart. So, who will I vote for? Who cares? Each man is a bought and paid for tool of the dominant culture. You know, the driving force behind the destruction of our planet. The choice put before us is the rate of destruction. Fast or really fast. An estimated $2.5 billion will be spent to persuade Americans to vote for fast or really fast. The dominant culture isn't spending a nickel on really slow or not at all. I was in a Starbucks a couple of months ago talking to a guy who was proposing we go into business together. We talked about all sorts of things, and eventually we touched on American politics. He claimed he was apolitical. He said he didn't follow the news, but then he said, I don't want to see Obama reelected. He didn't say, I'm voting for Romney. He didn't say he would vote for a third-party candidate. He didn't know Obama signed the National Defense Authorization Act, nor did he know what the NDAA was. He didn't know any of the reasons why I couldn't vote for Obama. He was apolitical. He didn't follow the news. Somehow, without reading a word about anything, he had come to the conclusion that he didn't want to see Obama reelected. I know he didn't read the news, or anything else for that matter, because there wasn't anything to read in his house. No magazines, newspapers, or books were visible anywhere. Reading material was conspicuous by its absence. Since he's a couple of years younger than I am, I asked him what he did during the Vietnam War. His answer? Smoked dope and partied. Well, after all, it was the 60s and early 70s. Smoking dope and partying was not uncommon. But it was also the time my generation was directly exposed to the darker, bloodier aspects of the American empire. Or to put it more precisely, white kids were finding out the government didn't mind killing them, too. I can't remember who said it or where I read it, but it went something like this. Living in America while the Vietnam War was raging was like being at an elegant party where everybody looks like they're having a good time, while at the same time pretending to ignore the stench wafting from the kitchen. My prospective business partner wasn't in danger of getting his ass drafted, so he could party on. But why didn't he notice the bad smells coming out of the kitchen? And now, decades later, why didn't he want Obama to be reelected? And why was I even talking to this guy? The dumbest darlings of the American press are the dim bulbs trotted out every 4 years so lavish attention can be paid to the undecided voters. According to an Associated Press GFK poll last June, 27% of the electorate doesn't know who they'll support in November. Are there really that many people who can't tell the difference between fast and really fast? I guess so. And in a sense, I like those morons better than my prospective business partner. If you don't know anything about Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, if you don't have a clue about any of their ideas, why would you not want to see Obama get elected? Racism. Pure and simple. Stupidity and racism, or racism and stupidity. It doesn't really make any difference what order you choose. The end result is the guy's a stupid racist. Is there any such thing as a smart racist? Well, some racists are smarter than others, but none of them are quiz kid material. So the question arises, why was I talking to this guy? And why did I continue talking to him after his stupid effing racist remark? Self-delusion and greed. I didn't think he was that bad, and I wanted the project to proceed quickly. My first mistake was not getting up from the table at Starbucks and walking out. Instead, I dialed down my misgivings and rationalized. Is there even a business partner out there who would pass my political test? My second mistake was not taking the time to find out. Well, last week he tried to pull a fast one with the money and I finally bailed. I'm not proud of the fact that money was the last straw, but there's always a but, isn't there? But I can't defend Barack Obama. If somebody doesn't want to vote for him, I understand. I'm not going to vote for him either. But it has to be for the right reason. As the nuns in arithmetic class used to say, you have to show your work. You can't vote for Obama because he's a war criminal. I'm with you. If you don't want to vote for him because he's black, get the F out of here. So now, at the ripe old age of should have known better, I've relearned a lesson. One I first learned way back when. 40 years ago, it was never sell marijuana to people you don't know. Now it's never start a business with stupid racist a-holes. Looping back to the beginning of this thing, though our vote is irrelevant, it's still a pretty good Rorschach test. The electoral system might be broken, but whom we vote for or against speaks volumes. Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. You can get your own copy of This Moment with Bob by going to Super Beans. That's right, superbeans.com. Where you'll find a whole list of moments with Bob. Sand writes in, if anybody watched Democracy Now yesterday, Amy Goodman had some Sikh men on who expressed their fear and had been harassed and beaten for who they are. I'm an atheist, but I will take some flowers to the local Sikh church on Sunday, hopefully with some other anti-war, anti-racist activists. Peace, Sand. Yeah, it turns out that Wade Michael Page was... did you see the pictures that they had on one of the network news programs? When this killer was a little boy, he was just beautiful. He was just so cute. His stepmother had some pictures. It was the kind of little boy you look at pictures and you go, oh, my God, I want this kid. I want to raise this kid. Just the sweetest little face. What happened? Well, when you have 20-some years of listening to scum like Glenn Beck and scum like Rush Limbaugh and scum like Sean Hannity and scum like Neil Bortz and the rest of these neo-fascist bastards, your mind can go. And in this case, it went. Apparently, according to Huffington Post, a day after this guy strode into a Sikh temple with a 9mm handgun and multiple magazines of ammunition, authorities are trying to determine if the 40-year-old Army veteran was taking his own advice when he opened fire on total strangers in a house of worship. Apparently, according to Huffington Post, this guy was trying to exhort his comrades in the hammerhead part of this sick, miserable society to rise up and kill people. Non-whites. Anybody who wasn't white. The band he was in played songs whose lyrics talked about genocide against Jews and other minorities. It's just... it just never stops, does it? I wonder when the next story is going to hit the airwaves. And have you noticed, Don mentioned, have you noticed the difference in coverage between Aurora and Milwaukee? A bunch of white folks get shot, and it's 24/7 for a week. A bunch of brown people get shot, and it's sandwiched in amongst regular election stories. No, I'm not surprised. Regards, Don.
just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Diane Breezy. God, I love that name. Diane Breezy. Diane writes, this is in memory of my mom, who would have been 86 today. She passed away in 2011. My mom was from Austria and lived through the Second World War. She would tell me how her father would listen to the original Air America on handmade radio to hear the truth about what was happening in the war. And this is why I listen to your show, for the truth. Keep up the good work. All the best to you, Kathy and Molly, Diane. Well, that's high praise. Thank you, Diane. We never feel deserving of any of that, but thank you, Diane. I appreciate what you had to say, and thank you very much for the sponsorship. What else we got here? Prairie 2 next hour, I think. Voters in Missouri tomorrow. Or no, today. This is Tuesday, right? I don't know how the election turned out, but voters in Missouri today got a chance to decide on an amendment to the state's constitution. According to an editorial in the New York Times, this constitution is supposedly intended to clarify the status of religion in Missouri's public places. According to the amendment sponsor, Representative Mike McGee, a Republican, the measure is needed to make clear that prayer is a right. You know where this is going, don't you? These right-wing Christians want to jam it down your throat. Wait till I tell you what's going on in Louisiana. Listen, seriously, let me digress from this New York Times editorial. The Christian right in this country is hell-bent, literally, hell-bent on destroying constitutional government and replacing it with theocratic government. In the meantime, they use straw man after straw man to divert everybody's attention. It doesn't make any difference if it's marriage contracts between same-sex couples or Muslims who want to build a mosque someplace or liberals who insist that the bank CEOs should be imprisoned for the rest of their filthy goddamn lives. All kinds of different straw men. Well, in the meantime, these lying defilers of their own God avatar. These are not Christians. I know Christians. I have Christians who are friends. These are not Christians. These are demonic sons of bitches who are defiling the name of their own leader. And there are millions of them. They show up to buy chicken sandwiches as a way of displaying their bigotry and hatred and contempt for their own avatar. But I digress. In Missouri, the amendment is unnecessary because the state and federal constitutions and court rulings already guarantee the right of prayer. But the amendment instead will create confusion and wreak havoc in classrooms by giving students the right to refuse to read anything or do any assignments that they claim offends their religious views. Oh, no! Why? Now, if you resist this, you're a goddamn bigot! You're anti-Christian if you resist this madness, you see. But I digress. The ballot summary about the amendment says it would ensure right of citizens to express their religious beliefs without infringement and students the right to pray in schools. Students already have the right to pray in schools. They always have had the right to pray in schools or in the toilet or wherever they want to pray while they're masturbating, while they're playing football, while they're running down the street, while they're holding up a 7-Eleven. They have the right to pray! Oh, now I'm screaming. The actual words in this amendment, however, would do much more than ensure the right of citizens to blah, blah, blah. The amendment would allow students who believe in creationism, for example, to opt out of assignments on evolution. It says, quote, no student shall be compelled to perform or participate in academic assignments or educational presentations that violate his or her religious beliefs. This language would almost certainly lead to litigation about who controls the curriculum in public schools. Another change could lead to litigation about where non-sectarian constitutional invocations cross the line into sectarian unconstitutional prayers. For example, instead of seeking the Almighty's blessing, officials at public events could ask for Jesus' blessing. No, 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 no. The wording of this amendment would further encourage, quote, the General Assembly and the governing bodies of political subdivisions to invite ministers and others to offer invocations or other prayers at public sessions. Amen. Hell yeah, amen. The Missouri Supreme Court has already said that the protection of religious freedom by the state constitution is more explicit than what the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution provides. And the state constitution of Missouri has adequate, as a matter of fact, the protection against government establishment of religion is more restrictive. So if Missourians amend their constitution, they will erode rather than enhance their religious freedom. But that's what these fundamentalist evangelical Christians want. They are not about religious freedom. They're about religious fascism. Always have been, always will be. It's just that they are lying sons of bitches. They violate their own Ten Commandments. They violate their own Bible. And they take their Savior and just beat his ass every day with the insults. These are not Christians. I don't know what they are, but they're not Christians. This hour is being sponsored by Paul Karsh, and Paul's message, Code Pink founder Medea Benjamin has written a book about drones. Now she wants to show the people of Pakistan that we're not all warmongers by leading a delegation of Americans to Pakistan to be part of a huge demonstration there against drone warfare that is killing their women and children. If you want to be part of this, but you can't go to Pakistan, you can still help. Our friend Randy Wilkinson was accepted to be in this delegation, but he needs to raise $2,000 to cover the cost of the trip. You can help him represent us by going to tinyurl.com/protestdrones and make a donation to help him out. That's tinyurl.com/protestdrones. Thank you so much for your help. Thank you, Paul. From Prairie 2. According to the rocket scientists at NASA, and I mean that in a good way, we are at a point in climate change due to global warming that they were predicting in the 80s that we wouldn't reach until the end of the 21st century. Not only that, but a phenomenon has developed that they didn't foresee. Unusual weather events like extreme drought, think Dust Bowl in the 30s, 500-year floods, things that used to be rare, events only occurring 1 in 1,000 times, these extreme weather events are now happening 1 out of 10 times. The odds are that as more heat becomes available to drive these weather patterns, this will only get worse. People who like to think of the U.S. as number one in all things might take note of the Commercial Aircraft Corporation of China, or COMAC. They are poised to begin direct competition with Boeing and Airbus in 2016, with their version of the 737 and larger planes are already being developed. China is now the world's largest aircraft market, passing the U.S., so they could easily become the dominant manufacturer. To lure worldwide carriers, the state-owned aircraft company has unlimited funds to develop and market deeply discounted aircraft of all sizes. From 1790 until 1980, the United States spent money to develop its industries. What are the odds that will ever happen again? The standard response from slow-thinking conservatives is, "Who would fly on a Chinese airplane?" Well, you do. Where do you think all the new parts come from? When all the major U.S. airlines send their planes for overhaul in Costa Rica, they come back with lots of Chinese parts. If you are lucky, they all come through normal suppliers and not black market, uninspected channels. Helicopter crashes have been traced to black market parts. What are the odds this will happen to a jumbo jet? Hospital Corporation of America's own panel of inquiry has found overwhelming evidence that several of their hospitals in Florida were regularly performing dangerous and unnecessary cardiac procedures. Oh, and they were also highly profitable operations to perform. If you think the name HCA sounds familiar, it's because it was founded by the current governor of Florida, and it paid a record fine of $2 billion for Medicare fraud. The right-wing talking point is that Rick Scott wasn't involved. He did, however, take the fifth during testimony something like 100 times to avoid incriminating himself. Yeah, you can guess the odds that he wasn't involved. Hey, some good news. We now have the most job openings in the private sector since before the Bush banking crash in 2008. Small problem. It's all over the corporate news that businesses are holding back or even cutting back because of the uncertainty of politics, worries about Congress, the deficits, the economy, etc. Quack, quack, quack. These are the same corporations that continue to show record profits and hold $5 trillion in cash. The odds are that they are deliberately holding off on hiring to affect the election. A new Romney ad presents a stirring narrative on how the Salt Lake City Olympics found itself mired in scandal and red ink, so they called on Mitt. He turned a $400 million deficit into a $100 million surplus. What are the odds that they will ever mention that this was done by getting a $1.2 billion grant from Congress for the so-called private sector Olympics? Sounds like what he really did was fool away an extra $700 million of taxpayer money, more than he needed to cover the deficit. That actually makes him worse than the guy he replaced. Now, on a happy note, the odds of Mitt Romney ever becoming president are becoming increasingly small. Now, if we could just do something about the weather, what are the odds? Little potpourri of tidbits from prairie2.com. You can always pick it up at tvnewslies.org. Take your pink. Louisiana. Mother Jones Online had this one up today, separation of church and what? There's a new law down there apparently privatizing public education in Louisiana. And thanks to this new law, Bible-based curriculum can now indoctrinate young, pliant minds with the good news of the Lord, all on the taxpayer's dime. This is, what's his name? Paiute Jindal? What's his first name? It's not Bobby. Is it Paiute? No, that's an Indian nation. Anyway, under Jindal's voucher program, considered the most sweeping in the country, Louisiana is poised to spend tens of millions of dollars to help poor and middle-class students from the state's notoriously terrible public schools receive a private education. Ta-da, ta-da, ta-da. The governor's plan sounds great in the glittery parlance of the state's PR machine. The program is rife with accountability problems that actually haven't been solved. For one, of the 119 participating schools, most of which are Christian, Zach Coplin, a gutsy college sophomore who's taken to change.org to stonewall the program, has identified at least 19 that teach or champion creationist non-science and will rake in nearly $4 million in public funds from the initial round of voucher designations. Now, many of these schools, it should be noted, rely on Pensacola-based Abeka book curriculum, or Bob Jones University Press textbooks that teach students Bible-based facts such as the existence of Nessie, the Loch Ness Monster, and all sorts of pseudoscience that researcher Rachel Tabachnik and writer Thomas So-and-so have pored over so the rest of us don't have to. Here's some of the favorite lessons that the kids in Louisiana are going to learn thanks to Rachel and Thomas. Dinosaurs and humans hung out together. Bible-believing Christians cannot accept any evolutionary interpretation. Dinosaurs and humans were definitely on the earth at the same time and may have even lived side by side within the past few thousand years. Number two, dragons were totally real. Is it possible that a fire-breathing animal really existed? Today, some scientists are saying yes. They have found large chambers in certain dinosaur skulls. The large skull chambers could have contained special chemical-producing glands. When the animal forced the chemicals out of its mouth or nose, these substances may have combined and produced fire and smoke. Number three, God used the Trail of Tears to bring many Indians to Christ. Whew. Number four, Africa needs religion. Africa is a continent with many needs. It is still in need of the gospel. Only about 10% of Africans can read and write. In some areas, the mission schools have been shut down by communists who have taken over the government. There's more. We'll be right back. What the kids in the school system in Louisiana are going to be learning when this new school year begins. The slave masters were nice guys. The majority of slaveholders treated their slaves well. Examples of slaves beaten to death were not common at all. Here's another one. The KKK was A-OK. The Klan, in some areas of the country, tried to be a means of reform, fighting the decline in morality and using the symbol of the cross. Klan targets were bootleggers, wife beaters, and immoral movies. In some communities, the Klan achieved respectability as it worked with politicians. Well, this is from the book United States History for Christian Schools, 3rd edition, Bob Jones University Press, 2001. The Great Depression wasn't as bad as the liberals made it sound. Perhaps the best-known work of propaganda to come from the Depression was John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath. Other forms of propaganda included rumors of mortgage foreclosures, mass evictions, and hunger riots, and exaggerated statistics representing the number of unemployed and homeless people in America. This is from the Abeka book, United States History, Heritage of Freedom. What's this one? The Supreme Court enslaved fetuses. Ignoring 3,500 years of Judeo-Christian civilization, religion, morality, and law, the Warrenberger Court held that an unborn child was not a living person, but rather the property of the mother, much like slaves were considered property in the 1857 case of Dred Scott versus Sanford. That's American Government and Christian Perspective. Oh, yeah, the Red Scare isn't over yet. It is no wonder that Satan hates the family and has hurled his venom against it in the form of communism. Whew. Here's another one. Mark Twain and Emily Dickinson were a couple of hacks. Mark Twain's outlook was both self-centered and ultimately hopeless. Twain's skepticism was clearly not the honest questioning of a seeker of truth, but the deliberate defiance of a confessed rebel. Oh, several of Emily Dickinson's poems show a presumptuous attitude concerning her eternal destiny and a veiled disrespect for authority in general. Throughout her life, she viewed salvation as a gamble, not a certainty. Although she did view the Bible as a source of poetic inspiration, she never accepted it as an inerrant guide to life. Bob Jones University Press, 2001, Elements of Literature for Christian Schools. Gay people have no more claims to special rights than child molesters or rapists. Bob Jones University Press, 1998, Teacher's Resource Guide to Current Events for Christian Schools. Global environmentalists have said and written enough to leave no doubt that their goal is to destroy the prosperous economies of the world's richest nations. 1999, Economics, Work and Prosperity and Christian Perspective, Abeka Books. And one more. Globalization is a precursor to rapture. But instead of this world unification ushering in an age of prosperity and peace, as most globalists believe it will, it will be a time of unimaginable human suffering as recorded in God's Word. The Antichrist will tightly regulate who may buy and sell. I mean, this is just, not only is it madness, but it's also sick, degenerate, insane garbage. Garbage. Can you imagine the children who are going to be educated this way? And it's not just Louisiana. There are several states that are doing this. Children who are going to be turned out of these filthy religious factories with the inability to think or reason, whose little minds and psyches are going to be twisted beyond recognition, who are going to live their entire lives afraid of haints and spooks and witches and goblins and things flying through the air. And they better be good or they're going to burn in a lake of fire forever. Oh, where's the resistance to this? I mean, seriously, why is it up to Freedom From Religion Foundation or American Atheists to resist this insanity? Why these two organizations? And while they're organizations that contain some real gutsy people, and they themselves are very gutsy in their stand, they are not able, I guess, to command the kind of platform that these filthy religious psychopaths command every single day, with jamming their religion down everyone's throat under the guise of, well, if you disagree with us, you're a bigot. Where is the resistance to this? Where? Where is it? The Chinese will be building, oh, I don't know, starships. And we'll be building, what did I see in the chat room? We'll be building Bible lands down in Florida. We'll be right back.
Doing Talk Radio Right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Paul Karsh. His message. Code Pink founder Medea Benjamin has written a book about drones. Now she wants to show the people of Pakistan that we're not all warmongers by leading a delegation of Americans to Pakistan to be part of a huge demonstration there against drone warfare that is killing women and children. If you want to be part of this but can't go to Pakistan, you can still help. Our friend Randy Wilkinson was accepted to be in this delegation, but he needs to raise $2,000 to cover the cost of the trip. You can help him represent us by going to tinyurl.com/protestdrones and making a donation to help him get there. That's tinyurl.com/protestdrones. Thank you so much for your help. Thank you, Paul. A couple of emails about what we're talking about regarding Bobby Jindal. It's Piyush Jindal.
You said Piyush. You didn't believe me.
You said it, and I didn't believe you. What did I say, Piyut? Piyush Jindal. All right, Kathy, you got it right. Michael and Roswell got it right, too. And he says everybody calls him PBJ. And, well, about those Christian tacks, what would one expect from a governor who ran on being an amateur exorcist? Ain't America grand. Yeah, that's right. He exorcised demons out of one of his college girlfriends or something. Boy, talk about a slick way of getting a little. Here, baby, I'm going to get that demon out of you. Hold on to this real tight. You ready? Okay. You ready? Okay. You ready? Now I want you to repeat after me. Hamana, 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 hamana.
But, Bobby, this doesn't seem like a exorcism.
Oh, yeah, it is. Oh, yeah, it is. Just hold on, hold on. Oh, a little tighter. Well, not that tight. Damn. Exorcist. Ooh. Oh, my God. Casting out demons. Amen. Amen. Jack in Shreveport writes, Mike, in addition to what you mentioned tonight, there are things in the paper almost every day about what either Jindal or the legislature have done to drive the state further into the abyss. It's mind-numbing. Jack in Shreveport.
Bobby, this doesn't seem like an exorcism.
I told you to hold on. And from Cindy, or Blue Lady, God used the Trail of Tears to bring Indians to Christ. WTF, did God use the ovens in Nazi Germany to bring Jews to Christ? Well, there are a lot of Christians that believe that. Boom, 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 boom.
Oh, Bobby, is this how you get rid of a demon?
Be quiet. Just days after praising Israel in Jerusalem, Mitt Romney took a shot at the kibbutzim, arguing in favor of American individualism and entrepreneurship. At a fundraiser at a downtown Chicago restaurant, Romney said, quote, what America is not is a collective where we all work in a kibbutz. Instead, it's individuals pursuing their dreams and building successful enterprises which employ others, and they become inspired as they see what has happened in the place they work and go off and start their own enterprises. Kind of an odd comment. Where's this from? Huffington? Odd comment for Romney, especially considering that he argued that Israel's culture made the difference in its economic success. Kibbutzim, or collective farms, were essentially building blocks in making Jewish settlements in Palestine and ultimately made the creation and growth of the State of Israel even possible. Well, by the way, they were totally communist. Totally. Small c. Communists. Totally. Who do you think founded the State of Israel? Mitt. Mitt Romney is the dumbest son of a bitch ever to run. I swear he is. Oh, and by the way, Michelle Bachmann, crazy Minnesota, who once caught heat for mispronouncing chuspah, has talked about her time at a kibbutz in the mid-70s, and she remembers it very fondly. This is what she said, remember? Quote,
"We worked on the kibbutz from 4 a.m. to noon. We were always accompanied by soldiers with machine guns. While we were working, the soldiers were walking around looking for landmines. I really learned a lot in Israel."
Jesus. Oh, my God. I don't think, I hope not. I don't think there's an American Jew that doesn't understand these Christian evangelicals, that what they're about. And I guess the American Jews are just working them. I mean, why not? You know, if it's money for Israel from these sick bastards, these Christian evangelicals, I'm sure the American Jews look at it and say, okay, you know, whatever. But is there a possibility that America, there's an American Jew somewhere that doesn't understand that these Christian evangelicals are like the Spanish Inquisition, like the inquisitors, if you will, who snatched up the Jews and Muslims in Spain? Let's keep it in one location. Snatched up the Jews and the witches and the Muslims in Spain, and gave them a quick choice. You know, what's it going to be, dude? The Roman Church? Or we're going to cut your goddamn head off. Well, a lot of people who were, committed to their faith or their non-faith or their whatever said, screw you. And, of course, then their heads rolled down the street. So is there an American Jew that doesn't understand that these Christian evangelicals have the same plan? You know, in that great getting up warning, according to the evangelicals, the Jews, when Jesus returns, the Jews are going to be given one quick opportunity. Accept or die. And these creepy Christian evangelicals, you know, they all carry very sharp knives. Did you not know that? They carry these sharp knives. And when the rapture comes, or the great getting up morning, or whatever, anyone who denies what they are seeing descending down a huge mountain of bloody corpses from heaven, that person will have his throat cut. Pew! Pew! You ever seen a throat get cut? Kibbutzim, huh? Right? Right, Mitt? No, America's not a kibbutz. No way. Hey, this one, this really kind of freaked me out. A couple of weeks ago, I saw this. In Fort Worth, Texas, there is a there's a cemetery in Fort Worth, Texas. It's the Handley Cemetery. It's been there for 135 years. And thousands of feet beneath this cemetery, a company has been drilling for natural gas using fracking. Now, you can imagine that drilling and fracking and all that vibration is going to cause a little bit of damage. But, you know, who would dig up their dead relatives to see if there's a crack in the casket? This was in the Times. And this guy named Don Young, who's been a longtime critic of fracking, which has proliferated in what is referred to as the Barnett Shale Formation that runs underneath Fort Worth area. He's also the founder of a group called Fort Worth Citizens Against Neighborhood Drilling Operations. Oh, my God. Now, his concern, apparently shared by others in different parts of Texas, Pennsylvania, and Ohio, where drilling for natural gas beneath homes, parks, churches, schools, cemeteries has become commonplace. Whoa, man. This really is something, huh? Cemetery owners apparently lease their mineral rights to oil and gas companies to allow fracking, earning money that many have used to refurbish and maintain the cemeteries, the fencing and the roads. Nothing. Capitalism stops at nothing. Capitalism will devour your ass. Capitalism will take your baby and chop it into pieces and roast it and eat it. Capitalism is the most vile economic system ever devised. And by the way, you Christians, it was devised by Satan. Chesapeake Energy, the second largest natural gas producer in the country, according to this, has worked with more than a dozen cemeteries in the Fort Worth region and has drilled directly beneath many of them. Company officials said they had not received any complaints from relatives about graves being disturbed. But they did get several calls from family members of those buried at Greenwood Cemetery asking if they could collect royalties from their loved ones' burial plot. Yeah, granddad's buried over. You digging underneath there? Well, goddamn it, give me some money. We live in a very twisted, perverted, corrupted place. This hour has been sponsored by Paul Karsh. His message, Code Pink founder Medea Benjamin, has written a book about drones. Now she wants to show the people of Pakistan that we're not all warmongers by leading a delegation of Americans to Pakistan to be part of a huge demonstration there against drone warfare that is killing women and children. If you want to be part of this but can't go to Pakistan, you can still help. Our friend Randy Wilkinson was accepted to be in this delegation, but he needs to raise $2,000 to cover the cost of the trip. You can help him represent us by going to tinyurl.com/protestdrones and making a donation. That's tinyurl.com/protestdrones. Thank you so much for your help. Last week, somebody called and said that beneath the ice in Antarctica, the prehistoric or the ancient equivalent of palm trees were found, and I had my doubts, but here it is. Scientists drilling off the coast of Antarctica made a startling discovery that could hold clues to the Earth's future, especially if climate change keeps warming the planet. According to a study published in the journal Nature, the frozen continent was home to a, quote, near-tropical rainforest 52 million years ago when temperatures measured about 68 degrees Fahrenheit. The sediment found in the Antarctic seabed may be more relevant during a summer when drought, record heat, and violent storms are being connected to climate change trends. One of the participants in this study, Australian Science, said, quote, "It shows that if we go through periods of higher CO2 in the atmosphere, it's very likely that there would be dramatic changes on these very important areas of the globe where ice currently exists. If we were to lose a lot of ice from Antarctica, then we're going to see a dramatic change in sea level all around the planet." And according to all the science now, even a small rise in sea levels could swamp major coastal cities from New York to Hong Kong. Scientists involved in the study warned that Antarctica could become ice-free again. Already rising levels of CO2 and other environmental factors have led to reports of melting ice and regional warming. That sounds so in the passive voice, doesn't it? Well, it could happen. Well, you know, maybe. Well, guess what they found beneath the ice in the Antarctica? Antarctica. Arctica. Oh, I'm sorry, Kathy. Antarctica. Open your mic and say that. Go ahead, just say it. Say it. Go ahead.
Nuclear.
Antarctica. All right, we are coming up on a break. And the third hour tonight, we'll take your phone calls. If you'd like to participate. Oh, yeah, and of course, the percentage of the Earth's land surface covered by extreme heat in the summer has soared in recent decades. Back before 1980, it was 1%. Now it's 13%, according to a new scientific paper. One of the authors of the paper is James Hansen, the NASA climate scientist. It's in the Times, I think, today. You can read it if you want to or not. But it's just further proof that what is going on is critical. And I saw something on the History, I think it was History Channel the other night, about global warming and how it can be arrested and how we can turn this whole thing around. And the people who were on the History Channel, they were all scientists. This was not, you know, in search of ancient spacecraft. This was a real science program. I think it was the History Channel. It might have been the Science Channel. But I guess it was Sunday night. But there they all were laying out the relatively simple plans. And, of course, the first thing that has to go is the fossil fuel industry. It has to be stopped now. And by now, that means we have maybe a little tiny, the window is closing so fast, and we have maybe, I don't know, a year or two or something. But if the fossil fuel industry were utterly closed down tomorrow, would there be a period of adjustment? You bet your ass there would be a period of adjustment. But is it worth it if it means planetary suicide if we don't do it?
Well, yeah, ain't no planetary suicide. Ain't none of that in the Bible. I mean,
Okay. You know, I used to think, well, I may have kids and grandkids, so I'll have to go through this horror, but at least I'll be dead and gone. At the rate that this is occurring, that may not be true. That may not be true at all. No one knows when... one's life is going to end. But you like to think when you reach a certain age, well, I have at least another 20, 25 years left. And if you are one of those people that thinks, well, I have at least another 20, 25 years left, or 30, or 40, or 45, then you're going to see it. But I'm talking about up here at the top end of the age thing, you know, for people who are critically aware of what global warming can and will do. So it could be turned around. And it maybe not. And maybe people who live another 20 years are going to witness the whole thing. What a thought, huh? We'll be right back. It's the hour. This is the Mike Malloy program. Thanks for tuning in. Before we take your phone calls, this is from Sergeant Doom. He used to call the program, didn't he, Sergeant Doom? He starts out, he just sent this to me. I don't know if he wrote it or where it comes from, but to achieve a world free of demons, we must first identify the demons. And then Sergeant Doom writes, instead of focusing on the newsy blah, 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 endless noise without content, let us examine the obvious factors leading to the horrible and mindless slaughter of those Sikhs in Wisconsin. The mindset of the psychotic gunman, an ardent neo-Nazi, sounded exactly the same as the typical Tea Party member. Most people should know by now that the Koch brothers are behind the funding of the Tea Party, just as a previous generation of the Koch family was behind the financing of the John Birch Society, the Liberty Lobby, etc., spreading neo-Nazi filth to stealthily aid corporate America's aims. These groups were originally the instigators of the anti-Semitic movement promoting the fantasy that the Holocaust never happened. The psycho killer lost his job, had his house foreclosed on by Wells Fargo, then blamed the Sikhs for his difficulties. Now there's your typical Tea Party neo-Nazi brilliance. These easily manipulated people couldn't identify the real enemy even if their name was tattooed on every surface of their bodies. The seemingly mindless horror perpetrated locally mirrors that which is perpetrated globally. We just witnessed the draft-dodging and tax-dodging Willard Romney go to Israel and rant like the warmonger he seeks to be. Romney reveled in promoting death and destruction on Iran and the people of that country. What leads us to believe that Iran pursues nuclear weapons? A so-called leak in the last decade tracked back to the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense, one Christopher Mellon. That would be Chris Mellon, a member of the super wealthy Mellon family. So the super rich Koch family has a lengthy history of promoting hatred and violence to profit their family, and now we note that a similar family, the Mellon family, is also culpable in the latest hate campaign against another country rich in oil and radium. Two families with a long involvement in war profiteering, oil, finance, minerals, mining, etc., and today are still involved with promoting local and global aggression. Why don't we hear more of these facts from our so-called media? Well, according to that well-respected Pew Research Center and one of their previous so-called studies, we have a liberal media. Guess that must be the reason, huh? Just a darn coincidence, by the way, that those Pew organizations originally established with oil wealth are chiefly funded by the oil companies. So, who would you recognize as the enemy? From Sergeant Doom. Phone calls. Tim from L.A. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good.
Well, thank you. Yeah, sorry I called up kind of late yesterday.
Yeah.
I just wanted to comment about Hiroshima this year.
Sure.
And not about you too in general. But, I don't know if this is a revelation, if this is something new, but first they had Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and now Fukushima. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I mean, I wrote this on your blog too, that the people in Japan want blood. They want, they're angry.
Mm-hmm.
They're mad. Because we destroy their nations 3 times. There's hatred. And on your blog, you know, some people were saying, oh, yeah, there were Japanese people who were apologizing, you know, for Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a facade that they put up to mask their anger. Excuse me. And I guess gay beggars can't grasp it. And I just sent you a story from The Nation, and if you don't mind, if I could read it.
Not the whole thing.
No, just one paragraph.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Okay, it goes, that night as the pair screamed in pain in their cells, these were two captured POWs after the bombing of Hiroshima, asking to be put out of the misery. The other Americans asked the Japanese doctor to do something. Do something, one of the doctors replied. You tell me what to do. You caused this. The two men died later that night. Even amongst doctors who were sworn to protect, you know, their patients were in anger too, back in 1945. And that anger is still brewing. Mm-hmm. And yes, they are angry at me too, even as a Japanese American. Why? Because I am an American. And yes, they want me dead. They would like to see me dead too. And I'm being honest. I'm gonna look, all this junk, all this crap that we've created over, you know, over the years, it happened again on March 11th, 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And I just ran my head against the wall and I said, not again. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I understand. A lot of our listeners probably don't understand that you have family that goes back generations in Japan, still have family there now.
Right.
I have to say, in fairness, though, that you have got to credit, and I use that word deliberately, you have to credit the government of Japan for lying to its people when the entire Fukushima event occurred. Not only lying, during and after, of course there is no after to this event, it's ongoing, but during the initial stages of this event, but lying previous, just as the nuclear industry in this country has
right.
lied. Now the only difference is TEPCO, if I'm probably wrong on this, is TEPCO have government involvement, or is it totally a capitalist venture?
It was a capitalist venture,
okay.
And earlier, I think it was this year, the government bought 50% of the shares.
Okay, so in this country it might as well be that way, because American taxpayers are always responsible for paying off these filthy pigs. And the two reactors, or one that is in being built not far from the studio in relative terms, is already $700 million over cost. They have found that the foundation is cracking, the foundation of the goddamn thing, and they haven't even started to go beyond the foundation. It's already cracking. But the point I was trying to make is that the governments of the United States and the governments of just about any country, including Japan, has to lie where it concerns nuclear power.
Exactly.
They have to tell lies in order. If they told the truth, then perhaps, well, maybe in a different time, people would have risen up and said, no, you're not going to build these goddamn things. Because there's no way to ever shut them down.
Exactly.
They can't be turned off. It's not like it's not like closing a filthy electricity-generating coal plant. It's not like destroying a dam and letting the water flow. You cannot end a nuclear reactor of the size that generates power. I mean, sure, you can shut it down. What do you do with the plutonium? I mean, it can't be ended. So this is one of the aspects of nuclear generating that we don't talk about. Nobody talks about it. So
they lie.
The government.
They lie. Everyone lies.
Yeah, the government of Japan, the government of the United States, are just as responsible to their people,
right.
They're as responsible to their people as they could possibly be. So I just wanted to.
I know that for a fact. I mean, I know that for a fact. But
right.
I'm just, you know, sharing the cultural aspects.
Sure.
Because I've been reading the.
It was the United States that unleashed all of this. Hold on a second, Tim. I got to do a break. It was the United States that unleashed this horror on the human race. And, you know, for that, I think for doing that, the people of the United States will be forever responsible and guilty. There's no way to escape it. Until the plutonium that's been generated is all gone, the American people are going to be responsible. 21 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. All right, Tim from L.A., go ahead.
Thank you, Mike. Yeah, I was talking to the folks in the chat room, the more loyalists, and one of them, my colleague, has said, it'll take another 150 million years before Japan clears up, so it's going to be a long time if there's any form of forgiveness. But, you know, I believe it's every Wednesday there's been a protest in Fukushima.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's been more than 400,000 people protesting. And there was a pretty major protest in Hiroshima this year. They had a die-in. And something like that is, you know, unheard of, especially in Japan.
Right, right. How much longer before some kind of direct action? I don't know what can be done. Japan, geographically, is about the size of California, right?
Right.
How soon before, and the population is about 38 million?
Around, I think. I'm not too sure. Around there, yes.
What happens when word starts to circulate among the citizens of that country that there is no way out of this, that the Fukushima event is not going to be stopped from doing what it's doing? Now, that's a pretty big assumption on my part, but I remember there were certain members of, I guess, the Japanese business community or I'm not sure who it was. It might have been some government officials that a couple of months ago were begging the UN to step in with scientists from all over the planet to contain this. And I have this horrible feeling that perhaps there are people who would be more interested in seeing how this plays out, where it concerns life in Japan, life in the sea, life, this event is not that far from China.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering, this is my sick mind working, but I'm wondering if there are interests at work here that would say, well, you know, you Japanese are going to have to handle this, just like the Russians had to handle their deal, so we're just going to... Now, I don't know what's going on. Maybe there was a response. Maybe there are, even as we speak, hundreds and hundreds of scientists, engineers, physicists who have swarmed to Japan to try to stop this radiation from continuing to spew out all over the place. But if so, it's not in any press that I've read. Do you know anything about it?
Actually, there really isn't anything, because I've checked all the mainstream presses, and I've also checked the whistleblower websites, and basically they're not doing anything. And
what about Japanese social media? Do you still speak Japanese? Do you read it?
My partner does, the one we're going to do the video, you know, the video project. She speaks, reads and writes Japanese fluently, and they're just hiding things. They're just hiding everything from...
Well, I noticed in the chat room, sometimes you use Japanese characters, and I just wondered if you speak it or read it or...
I understand it.
You understand it?
Yes.
Okay.
And, well, like I said, all the information that I'm getting, either from whistleblowers or from, you know, from people who are actually doing work in Japan, the UN basically isn't doing anything. There's nothing they could do. And there was one scientist who took, you know, the mathematical calculation of the way, you know, the nuclear power plants were leaking, emitting, dumping all the fuel and waste into the environment. That said, by the year 2015, unless there's another major earthquake, all of Japan is going to be contaminated. I wonder why they're mad at them. This was just one scientist, though.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, FYI, the population of Japan is about 122 million. The population of California is about 38 million.
Right, right, right.
But the landmass are about the same. Thanks to our research department in Roswell, New Mexico. All right, I got to move on. Tim, stay in touch.
Thank
okay?
Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much.
All right, all right. Thanks for checking in. Take care. All right, we're going to take a break here, and then we'll come back and take your phone calls. You have an open line if you want to jump in. 877-996-2556 is the number. It's difficult to think about the Fukushima event, and I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, this is another example or another instance where denial and avoidance just work so well, at least, you know, when you're about 14,000 miles away from it. We'll be right back. Jim is in Las Vegas listening on Sirius. Hi, Jim.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Great show last night, especially with your little teaching those young whippersnappers a little lessons in manners.
Yeah, well, they don't learn.
Well, I just wanted to go back to last thing. You talking about the fish die-off. How big was that?
Thousands. I think in one stretch, was it the Platte River? They estimated 35,000. Maybe it wasn't the Platte River, but just tens of thousands of fish. Because the water temperature apparently is too high to sustain life. Fish life, anyway.
Right. Well, the way I look at it, and this is my own, amateur biology theory, but like, your body, my body, your wife's body, your child's body is 98.6. If it goes up 1 degree, that's 1%. You got a fever. If it goes up 2, I mean, Kathy's a nurse or something like that, I think. But if it goes up, you know, I don't know what the percentage is, but you get up 3 or 4 percent.
Well, your brain will start to fry. Yeah, no, yeah. I know. The rule when you have kids, you know, if they have 101 fever, you take notice. 102, you continue to watch. 103, okay, maybe a cold washcloth on the forehead. 104, time to make sure you have the pediatrician's number. 105, get your ass and your child into an ER. At least that's been my rule of thumb over the years that I've been a parent. So, yeah, from 98.6, which is almost 97, you've got about 7 or 8 degrees that you can play with before there can be some serious brain damage, some serious cardio damage. So, humans are not designed to deal with the kinds of temperatures on a sustained basis that this global warming appears to be more than eager to produce.
Well, that's just my observation. Take it for what it's worth. But I noticed like the last fall and winter was up like 2 degrees. I saw that somewhere. I don't know where, but. Well, I guess we'll see what happens. I guess I'll put a towel on the forehead of the earth or something.
Yeah. All right, Jim, thanks. I appreciate you checking in again. Take care, okay? Watch out for the heat in Las Vegas. Philip is in San Diego listening online. Hello, Philip.
Hi, Mike. I, too, enjoyed the dumbass hour last night. It was fabulous.
The dumbass show. Yeah, that's about what it was, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. Well, yeah. Yes, the dumbass show. You ever wonder why you can have a solar panel on your house, but they can't have them on the car? that'd be one way to stop the problem.
I don't understand the physics, and I know I can be swamped with people who do understand the physics explaining it to me, but we've just got to get away from carbon-based way of living, the carbon-fuel-based way of living, or we're all going to die. I mean, it's just that simple, and we're going to kill the planet with us. I don't know where to start or how to begin, but we have to do it.
Absolutely. The other thing that's on my mind tonight is this whole election thing and the Romney thing and the he hasn't paid his taxes. To me, it's a big distraction, and I think it's distracting a lot of people from the congressional races, and especially the races like in the Senate, because there's a lot of candidates running on the GOP that are these freaky-ass Tea Party insane people.
Right.
And they're ahead in the polls, and what scares me more than bobblehead Romney in the White House is these people getting control of the Senate and getting control of the House, and then start to pass some of these insane laws that they want to pass. They're already trying to do it in a lot of the states, as you mentioned on the program. And I think that's scary. But I'm seeing, like, the network TV news. You know, MSNBC is supposed to be leaning forward and stuff, but every show talks about the same thing. Nobody's talking about these freaks that are trying to be elected into the Congress and to change this into, well, in my opinion, it's already a fascism. If you go by the 14 common threads of fascism,
right? Oh yeah. We're already there. But there's another way to look at it. It's the radical way to look at it, and it's a dangerous way to look at it, I guess. Is to consider if these rabid right wingers do get control of both houses of Congress and the presidency. It'll be a few short steps to open revolution in this country to completely and totally change the system. Because I cannot believe that 330 million people are going to just passively accept a truly out in the open fascist approach to government. I may be wrong. Maybe we have been so conditioned to just, like the people of Germany were conditioned. The slow boiling of the frog analogy. Maybe we've already passed a point of no return. But I just don't believe that people are not going to fight, and I mean literally fight, if fascism does take control in this country. So it may be. I don't want to say a good thing, but it may be a necessary thing to see the far right get control so that it'll wake the rest of us up to the point where we'll do something about it. And I mean something direct.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think something does need to happen. Yeah, but we said that about these lovely invasions or planned invasions and Iran, we're going to go into there. And nobody really pays attention here because nothing's really happened here. And when stuff really starts happening to these seabag bastards that want to run around and vote for these candidates and get them in to take away rights. You know, one example, you know, we don't like abortion. We're anti-abortion, but we're going to support candidates that are going to take money and funding away from these women that we're going to make have babies. Once all that starts happening, once people start feeling it in this country, then they may wake up. But till then, we've got the propaganda. You know, you watch what happened with the shooting just the other day. This was a big opportunity for media to call out some of these people like Bachman. No statement by her, I don't think, about that shooting, nothing. And it's because of her, and like you said on the program the other night, you know, these crazy people, Beck and the rest of them, that cause all that. So I think something really needs to happen in this country for people to wake up.
Well, we may be on the cusp of something happening that will wake people up. Thanks, Philip. I appreciate you checking in. Any mass shooting in this country in the past 15 years, as far as I'm concerned, can be directly attributed to the right-wing propagandists who so totally dominate media in this country, especially radio, which is where people who are in their cars or people who are traveling get so much poison. It's almost like having an IV tube where it just goes into your arm or your neck or your groin all day, every day, if you listen to this garbage. A lot of people say, well, you know, I listen to Right Wing Radio. I don't believe any of it, but I do it just because I think they're so goddamn crazy. Now, wait a second. You can't do that. You know, you look into the abyss. Eventually, the abyss starts to look into you. And either you know how that works or you don't, but take Uncle Mike's advice. If you are listening to Right Wing Radio and you're not really one of these crazy right-wing bastards, then you are getting real dangerous with yourself. You really are. I mean, it's your call, but every single mass shooting in this country, and probably a lot of them that weren't mass, is the direct result of people like Beck, Bachman, Coulter, Hannity, the drug-addled freak, Bortz, the rest of these people who have just been spewing out bigotry and hatred and poison for the past 20, 25 years. And anyone who disagrees with that is a goddamn fool. I mean, you can't have a country that is blanketed with right-wing poison 24/7, 365. You can't do it and expect your population to remain sane. So if we ever get serious about changing the culture, then people like Beck and Bachman and Coulter and the rest of these people have got to be silenced, just absolutely silenced. They have to be. You know, free speech is wonderful, but there are limits to free speech. Most states have laws where if I come up to your face and call you an MF-er, you have a right to shoot me. So there are limits to free speech. We have a whole class of people who have been poisoning the American mind for the past 20 or 25 years. And they have to be silenced, either silenced by people tuning them out completely or corporate America. This will never happen, but corporate America deciding that with a bunch of corpses in the United States, who's going to buy their garbage? But they have to be stopped. They just absolutely, and you right-wing turds that take down everything I say, take this down and get it out there. I want this out on your websites tomorrow. Malloy says the right-wing fascists in this country, and I just named them, and there's more, have got to be silenced. Different time. Well, it is. It's about 9 before the hour. Tomorrow's church night on the Malloy program. Hope you're going to be around for that. Eddie's in Garland, Texas. Hi, Eddie.
Hey, Mike. How are you tonight?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Hanging in there as usual.
Good.
Hey, I didn't know what to tell Kathy I wanted to talk about, but listening to your lead out to the break, now I know what I want to talk about.
Okay.
So, first of all, I want to say, you know, no matter how crazy the world is, I'm going to keep trying, never going to give up. And that being said, I want to go straight to all these shootings that have happened. And I want to ask you a two-part question.
Sure.
My first part is, why does it always seem that the Bible thumpers, the people, the right-wingers, are the ones that end up committing these shootings, like the guy in the Sikh temple yesterday And then, you know, I don't know if the Colorado guy was a right-winger per se, but I know his, from what I read, his parents are connected,
mm-hmm.
quote-unquote. So
right.
that could, you know, possibly tie him into the Fear Machine and all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then the Rothner guy with the Palin crosshairs and all that, you know. And, of course, you got the Oklahoma thing back when I was in high school, you know. All these guys seem to have some sort of connection with the right ideals, the right side of the spectrum ideals, you know, like they're afraid of their government, they're afraid of all this other stuff.
Right.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think a lot of them are have their brains poisoned, and the only place they get poisoned, I think the poisoning starts in their own homes. I mean, how does somebody develop the kind of bigotry and prejudice and insanity that some of these shooters or all these shooters wind up with, and the mental illness, unless it starts in their home. Sure, they get it from their peer groups, and they do make choices about who they're going to hang out with, but I think responsible parents, and I'm not talking about Christian evangelical parents, they're not responsible. They're hysterics, and they fill their kids' heads full of the most poisonous, fearsome
sure.
stuff you can imagine. I mean, when you tell a little kid that if he doesn't get saved or born again, he's going to burn forever in a lake of fire, what the hell is that? Does that inspire the kid to live a good life, or does it inspire a kid to live a life of just absolute fear?
Insanity.
Right.
And my pops, you know, my pops is Persian. He was in the military over there because they require all men, you know, he
right.
came over here in 73. They require all men to go through the military, and he's not afraid of guns, and he's not a combative person, but he's not a scary kind of individual. He raised me the complete opposite of what you just described.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and okay, so the second part of my question is, you know, I've talked to a lot of people, and I think, and that doesn't say much, but, you know, I think that, well, let me ask you what you think. This NDAA, and, you know, we've talked about the drones and the technology and all that good stuff. You know, do you think that maybe that stuff is being implemented and designed for the homegrown groups?
Well, I'm sure that it is being used, maybe not necessarily right now, the way it's being used in four or five different foreign countries. But as far, I read something the other day, I think it was in some, you know, respectable capitalist publication, probably the Wall Street Journal, or something about the development of drone technology is getting to the point where it's going to be used in this country to keep track of drought conditions, or, you know, they come up with all kinds of real passive kinds of things, or real pacific, peaceful kinds
like the
of
RFID.
Yeah, right. Peaceful right. things to right. For drone technology, when in fact I'm sure that there are major market police departments out there that are just champing at the bit to get their hands on something like this. I mean,
sure.
my God, you have drone technology, you can float above a demonstration, bring your camera down, find out who the leaders are, and ice them with the push of a button, you know, sitting someplace in Command Central.
Now, let me say one thing before you let me go, because I know it's coming. I'm a huge music lover, and I heard you talking about one time your beginning in how you got into this stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, how you got into radio and stuff. I don't remember exactly what you said, but, you know, we have the same common interest. Music is my getaway from all of this stuff. I mean, I play the guitar, I sing, I do all kinds of stuff, plus I go to school, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only escape I have, man. It's what keeps me going, you know.
It's a good one. It's creative. Music, unless it's heavy metal or this race music, but, you know.
Well, I like Ozzy, but not any of that.
No, I don't mean that. I mean like the hammerhead music,
yeah,
the hammer skins, like this guy that shot up the Sikh temple.
Oh, no.
But music to me, when it's used properly, is really the vibration of the spheres, and it will put you in tune, it will put
sure.
you in balance, it will put you at peace.
Because there's always a song for every emotion if you know what to look for.
Yeah.
You know, so I appreciate everything you do, and I'm going to keep plugging away, and I'm always out here listening, and I'm trying to promote you, trying to get people listening
Thank
to you.
Thank you.
Well, because, you know, you have something that a lot of people don't have. You know, you're talking about the Becks and the Bortzes and all those guys. They're festering hate, man. You know, your anger is not, I wouldn't call it hate. It's just fed up.
I'm hip. That's it, exactly.
Sure. So have a good night, sir.
All right. Thanks, Eddie. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Yeah, it is. It's reactive. I'm so goddamn sick of people poisoning my country, my political system, my atmosphere. I'm even sick of the bastards that have poisoned what could have been a relatively loving and benign spiritual belief system. So, yeah, do I hate them? Not to the point where I worry that much about them. Would I sit down to do this program and deal with this stuff? Yeah, I hate them. I hate them for their ignorance and their stupidity and their bigotry. And I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Tuned for